Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
Absolute pleasure. Willard and Dibs, y'all take it easy. Have a good one. Enjoy the game tonight.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Day before Niners report to training camp, I saw a post. Christian McCaffrey's wife, Olivia Culpo, recently gave birth to McCaffrey's first, I think it's a son. Maybe it's a daughter. I'll have to go and check. This is bad by me.
It's just a baby.
And she posted that McCaffrey, wherever their off-season home is or wherever Olivia calls home, I don't know if she moves out here with Christian for the season
this
or whatever.
This is a well-researched bit so far. I got to tell you.
I got to go and look at it. She posted that McCaffrey took off today. So wherever he was, he is en route. He's in transit to Santa Clara. So he's really reporting more like today than tomorrow. He will head to the Niners facility tomorrow and actually show up for the beginning of training camp. But he has left his off-season home and is on his way to Santa Clara, Dibs. And the Niners season might just go however Christian McCaffrey's season goes.
It might. And officially it is a girl.
There we go.
Baby girl. Colette is her name. And so Olivia Culpo and Christian McCaffrey, parents of a daughter. I don't know exactly where they live and where he's traveling back to the Bay from.
Yeah, me neither. That's my fault.
That's all right. Shake that off. It's not that important. And the devil is in the details, as they say. And ultimately, the main thing is he's coming in, and he looked good when we were out there for, I think that was a mandatory mini camp or OTAs. June. And he looked spry. He looked eager. He looked bouncy, which I'll give you that as well, that he needs to be that player, and he needs to be somebody who is on the field a lot, and hopefully they don't rely on him to have 25 touches a game, catches and carries and whatnot, because that might wear him down when you get to the end of the season. But having him in the huddle is a threat in and of itself, because when you break the huddle with McCaffrey, you don't know necessarily where he's going to go. He can go out wide, he can go in the slot. He'll be in the backfield, obviously, but that is one thing you're going to miss not having Deebo Samuel, is sort of what I call the huddle confusion. Mm. When you've got a huddle with McCaffrey and Deebo and Ayuk and Kittle and, let's just say, Juszczyk, it could be Juwan or whatever, you don't know if it's going to be Deebo in the backfield or McCaffrey out wide. You can do different things. So from a defensive scheme standpoint, when you have that many variable pieces in a huddle, you can't necessarily know what the other team's going to be doing.
Yeah, what Shanahan's so good at, and he has to get back to this more, because I think he had a bad year as well, and circumstances make it more difficult, but Shanahan, you're one of the better head coaches, and your mind, in terms of an offensive mind, is maybe the best, at the very least one of the best, in the entire league. But what he is so good at least what he has been so good at, Dibs, is the ability to make a run play look like a pass and a pass look like a run. So you confuse the defense that way, and it's like 10 times easier to do that when you have a player like McCaffrey or Deebo who can both catch the ball and carry the ball. So now that you don't have Deebo, how do the 49ers go about keeping up with that deception? One, it's McCaffrey, and two, that's where Ricky Pearsall, you would imagine, would come in. And the Niners have a whole offseason with a year's worth of Pearsall information under their belts to, you know, devise a whole set of plays for him and not necessarily use him in the Deebo Samuel role. Like, you're not going to run Ricky Pearsall right up the middle between the tackles, but you can have plays for him on end arounds and on little quick screens and creative plays like that. That's the way that the Niners and Shanahan could, again, take advantage of their ability to confuse a defense. And McCaffrey will be front and center with that, but they're going to have to now find new ways to do that with others, because you also can't just run McCaffrey into the ground.
Right, and it's kind of the way you look at the roster and also the way Shanahan, you know, tries to scheme up a game where, yeah, you have Deebo, you can bring him in motion, and they did that a lot, and it's a threat of the jet sweep when you got Deebo in motion. And also you could have Deebo start out wide and you can motion him into the backfield, and now he's a running back. And so you do lose that sort of versatility and flexibility with your personnel, because you're not going to do that, like you're saying, with Ricky Pearsall. Maybe you run some jet sweeps with him.
Yeah.
I do think that Jacob Cowing becomes an interesting piece for that, because he's got a lot of speed. And, you know, you don't have the same rugged running with Cowing or Pearsall that you did with Debo, but you can definitely use the speed. And, you know, Garendo's a guy who can fly as well. So you probably look at different personnel and you run different plays than you would with Debo.
Yeah, I'm curious. How do you think... Okay, let's just assume that things don't go great in the wide receiver room. Jawan, I don't know. It's difficult to play out because you think that there's going to be a resolution to Jawan one way or another by the time week one comes around. Let's just... And so much of how the wide receiver room, particularly Jawan, plays out might depend on how Shanahan and the offensive staff feel about their other options at wide receiver. But do you feel like someone like Cowing or someone else like their rookie Jordan Watkins is going to be able to have the chance to play meaningful snaps? Because for so long, Kyle Shanahan has just been incredibly hesitant to use any young wide receivers. I mean, it goes back to Ayuk being in the doghouse his rookie year, and even in his second year at times still dealing with that sort of thing. Do you think Shanahan's reluctance to use young receivers has been because of just whoever those players were on an individual basis? Is it because that's just a principle that he has, or is it more so created through his ability to say, well, I have all these other dudes, why would I play you when I've got these other veterans I can rely on?
I think it's both of those points, but it's also the idiom or the axiom, rather, of you got to block to get the rock. And we have a saying for my daughter, who's almost three, you got to eat to get a treat. And so we actually do this little, you got to eat to get a treat. And she knows it now. So, you know, if she doesn't eat, we say, you got to eat. And she says, to get a treat. And it's like, that's right. And then when she eats, she gets usually a rainbow popsicle and
nice.
Or chocolate cookies or whatever it
worth
is.
Worth it.
Right.
It is worth finishing the broccoli to get a cookie.
That's right. And she actually loves broccoli. Sometimes it's the protein. But if you're Shanahan, you got to block to get the rock. And that is where I think about younger receivers, where you have to be able to go out there and do what Jawan Jennings is so good at. And I was looking at the Pro Football Focus numbers last Friday when you and I were doing the show. Jawan Jennings, number one among wide receivers, according to PFF, in run blocking. So he's the number one run blocking wide receiver. And that's why Jawan Jennings got playing time. Well, now it's out of necessity and he's a good receiver.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That's how Jawan was able to break through and really be a part of it. And Debo Samuel the same way. Debo, very physical and a great blocker. And I think Brandon Ayuk is a good blocker. I'd have to go back and look at the 2023 numbers and see where PFF had him as a run blocker. But he strikes me as a guy who's not afraid to get out there and be physical in the run game. So I think about Ricky Pearsall, Jacob Cowing, Watkins, whoever else it's going to be, when the Niners go to, and here it is, first time this week, 21 personnel, which is Juszczyk and McCaffrey.
Won't be the last time this week.
It sure won't be. You got Kittle as your tight end, two running backs, one tight end, two receivers. If you're going to be in a run-heavy mindset, which they are, in a run-heavy formation like that, you got to have wide receivers who are going to do their part. So that, I think, is where Shanahan is less willing to just put a rookie or a speed burner out there unless that person is able to go out there and block.
Yeah, and to your point about Ayuk as a blocker, I don't know what the PFF grade is on him, but one image that seared into my mind was week one, 2023, in Pittsburgh, if you could remember where you were. That was right after the Niners and Nick Bosa figured out their contract dilemma, and they play week one in Pittsburgh, and they absolutely dominate the Steelers en route to that 5-0 beginning to the season. But one of the touchdowns on that game, that week one game, it was McCaffrey, something like a 60-yard touchdown run down the left side, and it was Ayuk, who I don't know if he was blocking multiple guys on that play, but through the course of, I don't know, the final 40 yards, it was Ayuk just leading the way in front of McCaffrey and just pushed his dude all the way like into the end zone. It might have been the entire way just pile-driving his guy backwards. And I think that is something, Dibs, to your point, that Kyle Shanahan might get more fired up about than a guy making a contested catch over the middle.
Absolutely, especially when you think about the Shanahan offense, which is run first and pass when necessary. And I could run down some of the numbers I did on my deep dive about how often they win when they have the time of possession victory. When they have more possession than the opponent, they win at about a 70% clip, and I don't think that that's by accident. It's by design. Shanahan has his team built to where you get a lead, you keep the lead, you run the ball, you possess the ball, and you win. And that, I think, is the blueprint. Just looking at last year's PFF numbers, I mentioned Juwan number one in run blocking among receivers.
That checks out.
Pearsall was number 21, and Ayuk was number 22. So, I mean, still, both of them,
yeah,
top 25 guys. And, you know, you have to go far down the list to find a lot of teams with three receivers who block that well as these three did last year.
Yeah, yeah. Those three are good at it, and it's partly why they play so often, partly because, out of necessity, those are like the three proven guys for the most part, Pearsall less so. But you have to be able to do that in this 49er offense. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I want to play Richard Sherman on Juwan. I'll play that in just a sec. But first, I want to remind you that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM in HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. And sometime over the next 30 minutes, we'll ask you a question about something we said over the previous 30 minutes. Just keep listening for the question and the cue to call the contest line. If you need to jot down the contest line now, here it is, 415-523-4652. Again, 415-523-4652. When you hear the cue to call and you have the answer to the question, dial that number, and if you're the first to give us the answer, the pair of tickets to Saturday night's Giants-Mets game will be yours, again, courtesy of Panini. Best of luck. That is coming up shortly here on Willard and Dibs. All right. Richard Sherman on the Richard Sherman podcast via the volume on the Juwan Jennings contract dispute.
Juwan deserves what he deserved, mm-hmm. And he put on had almost 1,000 yards last year, 77 catches, did a great job, does a great job separating, doing all the dirty work, run blocking, pass blocking. Like, hey, whatever needs to be done, he's willing to do, and I think he would thrive if he was a number, you know, two receiver for somebody and really getting targets like the way he deserves. I think they might do something. You know, I don't think they give him any more money. I think they may take some of the money from the year two,
yeah,
and try to push it forward so they could try to at least appease him, a Band-Aid,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, push the issues back. They got a lot of dead money this year. They'll have more money next year when some of these dead money, big contracts come off the books. I think you got to do something,
yeah.
You know, because you do not want another distraction kind of just lingering on into the season.
There's Richard Sherman. You definitely don't want another distraction lingering. I also think he makes a good point, and it's what we've been talking about, Dibs, for the last 5 or 6 minutes. If the Niners, Kyle Shanahan and the Niners, aren't willing to pay Juwan Jennings or give him, you know, a bump and essentially give him what he wants, you wonder, what do you got to do to get what you want? Like, I feel like Juwan Jennings is Kyle Shanahan's dream receiver. The guy who will do all of the dirty work. The guy who's at his best on third downs. The guy who became a security blanket for Brock Purdy all of last year. He was amazing last year, specifically once Deebo Samuel went down. But you remember early in the year when Deebo was trying to work his way back into football shape, it was still Juwan and Kittle who were doing the majority of the receiving for the 49ers. Juwan Jennings is the kind of receiver that Kyle Shanahan loves, and if he's not willing to give him the money that he might want, then I don't know. I don't know what kind of sign it sends, but it definitely feels like Juwan is the kind of player that Shanahan would want to pay and keep around.
Absolutely, and you look at what he's making, and Richard Sherman is right as far as the contract, and he's got about, I think, $4-plus million is the salary, and then you get another $3 million that he could earn if he hits his incentives, and if he plays like he did last year, he will hit all those incentives, and so he could earn up to $7.5 million, I think, this season. So what Richard Sherman was talking about is what I have kind of been saying, I think, is the most likely way this goes, which is you take the $3.5 million that is in incentives and you just guarantee it, and you add on another year onto his contract. So you turn out, right now it's 1 year left, and it could be $7.5 million. So you take it and you turn it into a 2-year deal worth about, I don't know, $12 million, and $7.5 million of it is guaranteed. So all the money that he potentially could make this year, you get that. And then you go into next year, and if you decide at that point that, you know, you want to part ways with him and you want to cut him or whatever, the damage would be minimal next year as far as a cap hit goes, and he would get more guaranteed money now, and he would get a year tacked on, but it's not a real year, right? It's just how much is the guaranteed.
Yeah.
He goes from a guaranteed 4.25 to maybe twice as much as that. You guarantee him 8, and you know, you do right by him to where, yeah, this year, go out there and play great again, and then we can have this conversation again.
You're talking about the way in which they can, be creative with the money and a contract and all that, and just take the incentives from next year that aren't guaranteed and plop them up ahead now to get him more money now and, you know, guarantee more of the contract and add the extra year and yada, yada, yada. Just listening to that and just, I would imagine, like, Mike Dunleavy and Joe Lacob are like, man, I wish we could do stuff like that.
Right? Absolutely.
One, it's not fully guaranteed.
Nope.
And two, I can be creative and just, instead of paying you X amount next year, I can pay you a big chunk of that now, and I can clear up space for me next year so I can go and sign somebody else. Could you imagine if the way that NFL contracts worked were in any other sport, specifically basketball? Oh my God.
You could work magic. For example, Steph Curry, where he's going to be, I think, the highest paid player in basketball this year, and he's worth every penny. What if you were able to Shohei Ohtani that baby? And, you know, take whatever you owe Steph, which is about $110 million, I think, over the next 2 years, and you stretch that thing out for 10 or 12 years, and, you know...
Steph will pay you $1 million a year.
Yeah, we'll pay
the
you...
The rest is deferred.
Right, deferred money. So we'll give you, you know, $1 million now, but, you know, trust me, you're going to get that Bobby Bonilla type of payout year after year. But basketball, you sign it, and that's it. You can't even rework it. And that's why this year has been interesting, where Bradley Beal and Damian Lillard, those teams, for two different reasons, looked at it and said, no, we don't, like, Dame, you're out for the year. We don't want to pay you. We're going to try and do something with your salary. So you cut and stretch, right? Is that what you, I think you were calling it that?
I think it's the wave and
the
stretch.
The wave and stretch, whatever, yeah. So you wave them, and then you take the money and you stretch it out over years to come, and so that lessens the hit, and the player still gets his money.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, and football, it's really funny money. And so if you're Juwan and I'm John Lynch and I come to you and say, you know, Juwan, we really value you. And, you know, we have other receivers in the building, but especially right now, man, we really need you. We want you to be happy. So we're going to give you a 2-year deal. We're going to tear up this year's contract. We're going to give you 2 years and, I don't know, $17 million, $8.5 million a year. We'll give you the full $8.5 million this year guaranteed, in a signing bonus and in a salary. And then, yeah, next year, if you're still around, you get another $8.5 million next year. And he'll know, and John Lynch will know full well that that may not actually happen. But he'd at least get $8.5 million now.
Yes.
Instead of getting 4.25 for sure, we're going to double that. So we're going to guarantee you $8.5 million. And then, you know, it's a 2-year deal. And at the end of this year, if you dominate again and we're good and we want you, we can rip up the contract again.
Yeah. And, I mean, that happens every year for Niners players. Every single year. If you're so good enough and they want you around, they'll be creative with you to help you get what you want. Generally, it's happened. Now, they have regretted it at times. Like, they probably regretted the Ayuk one
yeah.
the second that it happened. But if you look at it from Ayuk's perspective, you can understand entirely where Juwan Jennings is coming from, even though his contract is not up. And I know you and Willard had this conversation last week about, well, is it fair that a team can just say, bye-bye, we're cutting you, and the non-guarantees you never have to pay out, but we get upset when a player is still on a contract and wants more and refuses to play until they get more? Is that fair? Is it not fair? Whatever. You just look at Ayuk as the example, and you can understand exactly why Jennings is doing what he's doing. Ask Ayuk right now, Dibs. Was it worth it, all the trouble that last offseason caused you and the drama that you're still feeling? The team might not want you at your contract number. You might not want to be here anymore. Was all of that drama worth it so you could get your money? Yes, absolutely. Because
right.
Imagine he went into last season, Dibs, without that contract and tore up his knee the way that he did. He might never even sniff anywhere near that money for the rest of his career.
You're right. And he went into last year and he made 5.725 was his cap hit. And that included some of the prorated signing bonus and that money he already had recouped. So you go into that, you get the new deal, 4 years and $120 million, $30 million average annual. But the key is the guaranteed at signing, which is the no matter what money. He got $45 million no matter what. And the no matter what includes when you tear your ACL and MCL ligaments in your knee, and you're going to be out for, you know, 9 to 12 months. Hopefully he's back by October, or who knows when he'll actually be back. But the good news is for Brandon Ayuk, he gets the 45, you know, crisp and clean.
No matter what.
Yeah. So he gets that. And, you know, had it gone the other way, like you're saying, he doesn't get a new contract and he just, I'm going to bet on myself. And then he tears up his knee. That might be it. And the 49ers would have cut him at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And he would be a street free agent right now with a bum knee trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, I think about it from the Kuminga standpoint.
I was just going to go there, too.
I know, Grant. You and I are finishing each other's sentences now. So I like this. We're locked in. But Kuminga, he's going to potentially bet on himself. But basketball doesn't have the same injury rate as football. But if I'm Kuminga's camp or his family, I'd be holding my breath every time he leaves the floor to go up for a dunk or a rebound. Because, I mean, that's how I tore up my knee, was playing basketball. And basketball is quietly sneaky dangerous, you know?
Easy. You can tear up your knee, tear your Achilles, easy.
Ankles, Achilles, knees. Actually, both of my calamitous injuries were from basketball.
What's your other calamitous?
Torn labrum.
Oh.
It had already been torn repeatedly, but the last time I grabbed a rebound with the ball behind my head, and Mike Rabb, shout out Mike Rabb, he just grabbed the ball and pulled straight down. He just pulled my arm.
Oh, down.
Straight down. And I ran into the bleachers to try to, like, lethal weapon it back in the socket. And it didn't work.
Did not work.
And so off we go to Marin General. Screaming.
That's a weird feeling.
Yeah.
You just feel it's out of the socket. And you're
it's beyond weird. And you can't get it back in. And so, I mean, screaming. If you ever want to get to the front of the line in an emergency room, walk in screaming. So the doors open, boom, and I'm just screaming.
How old were you?
35, somewhere in there.
That must have been pretty damn painful.
Screaming. And the lady behind the counter, God bless her, Bertha or Esther, I can't remember. She looks at me. She's like clearly fatigued at this whole scene, and I'm just screaming. She goes, "Sir, did you dislocate your shoulder?" She goes, "Right this way." So I didn't have to wait in the waiting room because they don't want the screaming guy in the waiting room.
You were the eighth screaming 30-year-old that she had to deal with that day.
Right. Yeah. So she takes me in, and I'm just screaming, and the doctor comes in. Morphine one, nothing. Morphine two, nothing.
Whoa.
Morphine three, and I looked at him.
That's the good stuff.
And I said, "I love you, doc." Yeah. And then he takes my shoulder and goes, "Vroom," and just folds it back in place, wrap him up, and send him home. Yep. Anyway,
gross.
Basketball.
But
dangerous.
That's what Kuminga is weighing right now, where we don't need to spend a lot of time on Kuminga. Nothing happened over the weekend. Surprise. You and I were both right. Nothing would happen. Nothing happened with Juwan. Nothing happened with the Giants at the deadline, and nothing happened with Kuminga either. So 3 for 3 for us. Not that those were difficult questions, but we were right on that. That's why I view that it's incredibly unlikely that Kuminga would take the qualifying offer because of that risk that is in place. But it means somebody's going to have to compromise because they still don't have an agreement in place. And that's a similar spot that Juwan is in as well. Juwan has way more leverage than Kuminga does, the way that this all plays out, because Juwan is looking at the rest of the wide receiver room and saying, "All right, Kyle. All right, John, play without me. Let's see how you do without me.
I dare you.
And then you'll come crawling back to me by week 2 when your receivers piss you off because they don't block the way I do, and then you'll pay me what I want. If it comes to that, maybe Juwan's thinking, I'll do it." And that's the mindset you have to go into this with, because if you show any sign of weakness, then your employer, no matter how much they love you, they will take advantage of that.
True, but also you have to go about it in such a way so as to not, you know, alienate your teammates and piss off the front office and your coaching staff, which is why I kind of agree with you. Last week, you were talking about a hold-in, a classic hold-in, which you report, and that would be tomorrow where everyone reports and all eyes will be on Juwan Jennings, whether or not he actually shows up. And I think that he will show up. Whether or not he gets out there Wednesday and runs around and catches and blocks and does the things that football players do, that's yet to be seen. Just looking at SpotTrack, I see his agency is listed as Drew Rosenhaus.
Okay, that's a big name.
It's a big boy.
Yeah.
And I think that that's his agent, and I'll look to confirm that. But if that is, in fact, who is representing him, Drew is a big boy, and he's a guy who has gotten many, many wins in all kinds of negotiations.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head who he represents, but we're talking about a lot of the stars in the NFL. So that's nobody. That's somebody that is used to these negotiations, Dibs, and won't be fazed if it gets a little bit ugly and leads into to preseason. Like, he will not be fazed by that. Now, ultimately, he has to. He can suggest what Juwan should do, but ultimately, he does whatever his player wants him to do. So it's going to ultimately come down to what Juwan is willing to risk and how Juwan wants to play it. But the Rosenhaus, that is someone who probably is dealing with another one of these already simultaneously this season. That's how big of a name he is.
Right, and this is where you get to this point, and I just saw that Drew Rosenhaus confirmed, I think, to the Chronicle that this is what Juwan wants, and he wants either to get a new contract or to be traded. And this is straight from the playbook, where you get close to camp and you realize that whatever negotiations have gone on behind closed doors, and I imagine there have been some, at least discussions, and you get to a point a couple weeks out from camp and you decide it's time to take the next step. And in this case, the next step is not a demand, but you're asking to be traded. And I do think that there's power in the semantics of that. You know, if you demand to be traded, that is, for me, more severe, and at that point you might be less likely to actually show up. That might be a hold out. But when you request to be traded, you know, either a contract or, you know, he wants to seek a trade, that to me is a little bit more genteel than a hardline stance.
Do you think this is going to get ugly at all between Juwan and the Niners?
I don't. And to me, it stems from what the ask will be. So if you're Juwan, if you're Drew Rosenhaus, and you're looking at the situation and you look at your player, he's not a wide receiver one, and he might be a wide receiver two now. I'll give him that, especially on this team where blocking is so important. And Ayuk is coming off a major ligament surgery. Deebo Samuel is now in our nation's capital. And Ricky Pearsall, God love him, can't seem to stay healthy.
Yep.
So the leverage for Juwan Jennings is roster-based, and it's also performance-based because he was great last year, and he blocks, and he has that Shanahan mentality of, you know, he's a lunch pail guy at the receiver position. Mm-hmm. He's not a diva. You would never look at Juwan Jennings and say, diva? So he fits the Shanahan mold perfectly, so that's where the leverage is. But, I mean, is Juwan Jennings a guy who is going to command $20 million a year?
No.
Right. I don't think so either. I mean, can he be a guy who you sign for 2 years and $18 million? You give him $9 million guaranteed, and would that be enough for Juwan to be happy? I think that's where you're eventually going to see this fall. And so as we get into camp this week, we get into next week, I think that something's going to get resolved and Juwan will be out there sooner rather than later.
Well, I wanted to ask if you thought it's going to get messy, because I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near what Ayuk was last year. And so much of Ayuk was because of the big nature, the big money nature of the situation itself. Even a smaller scale deal can still get ugly, but I don't think it will even sniff the levels of Ayuk drama from last year. I ask you, though, because there is a situation playing out in Dallas that maybe is the comparison or something that is at the very least worth bringing up. Micah Parsons is, we mentioned this last week, I think on Friday, the very tail end of the show, because T.J. Watt got his gigantic deal. Nick Bosa now tied for the 7th highest AAV contract for non-quarterbacks in NFL history. He will soon be tied for 8th whenever Micah Parsons gets his deal, whether it's with the Cowboys or elsewhere. I say or elsewhere because Jerry Jones was asked about that contract that is not yet there for Micah Parsons, who is due his extension and is going to have to make a decision if he's going to hold out or hold in or, you know, do whatever he's going to do. Jerry Jones asked about that situation, and here's what Jerry Jones, ahead of Cowboys camp opening up, had to say about that today.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt six games last year. Seriously. I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out two-thirds of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
Could you imagine if Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch said something like that when talking about one of the best players on their roster and their ongoing contract negotiations? Just because we signed him doesn't mean he's going to play. He missed six games last year.
That's pretty good, Jerry. I thought you could have gone with a little bit more Southern twang. I thought you were going for it at first, but you kind of backed away from it.
Yeah, I did.
And Micah has reported. And whether or not he actually plays,
yeah, we'll see,
is another thing. And just looking at the story from ESPN, it reminds me of my trip down to Santa Barbara about a month and a half ago.
Okay.
I played golf in Oxnard, and the golf course that I played abuts where the Cowboys actually have their training camp.
Oh, okay.
Some of the guys I was playing with on, I think it was like the ninth hole, I was like, oh, that's kind of a random little football field.
Yeah, and what's going on there?
They're like, that's where the Cowboys have their training camp.
Wow.
It's literally right next to this municipal golf course. Huh. But so I was actually now picturing in my mind Cowboys camp in Oxnard, and Micah has reported whether or not he plays is yet to be determined.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine Shanahan or Lynch saying that about, like, George Kittle, for example. You know, oh, we like the player, but I'm not sure if he's going to be available, you know?
Well, and then he also took a shot at his quarterback.
Right.
He said, we also paid this other guy most money ever, and it still is for a quarterback, by the way. And then he said, and he missed two-thirds of the year. And then he decided to, after saying all that, and everybody who knows anything about the NFL knows he's talking about his quarterback, Dak Prescott, and he, like, treats it like it's some sort of mystery, and he says, oh, like, by the way, I'm talking about Dak Prescott. He actually decides to say the name. That's just absolutely amazing. And J.J. Watt had tweeted about this and said, anytime you can publicly take a dig at your star quarterback and your star pass rusher simultaneously right before the season begins, you just got to take it. Nothing makes guys want to fight for you more than hearing how upset you are that they got hurt while fighting for you. And then Micah Parsons retweeted that tweet from J.J. Watt. So it is not smooth sailing in Dallas. I only bring it up, Dibs, because it is always fun dunking on Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and making fun of all their problems, but it's just a comparison of the drama, if you want to call it that, around Juwan Jennings and what is going on elsewhere around the league. It really, really pales in comparison.
There really is no drama around Juwan Jennings. It's just a guy who is underpaid in his mind, seeking to get more money, more guaranteed, and that is just the way you go about it in the NFL. And I don't love it. And Willard and I had this debate last week on, you know, what would I do? And if I'm the Niners, I would probably play hardball. But you're in a spot where you need Juwan a lot, especially if Ayuk is not ready and Robinson maybe gets a three-game suspension and all the rest of the names we can run down. You don't necessarily have a well-established wide receiver room where you can just say, all right, Juwan, kick rocks. We're fine without you.
Yep.
You're really not fine without him. But you look at the way the Cowboys go about this, and you know Parsons is going to make $24 million this year because they exercised the fifth year on his option. They could have him play on the $24 million and then franchise him the following year. And that is just the way some teams go about it. And if you're Micah Parsons and that is what the Cowboys are intimating they might do, well, then you go into like shutdown mode, or
yeah.
I don't know what you decide to do, because Micah Parsons is, even though he's missed some games, apparently, six games, you never know how much you're going to miss. He's, what, top five or top seven pass rusher in
oh,
the game?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you go Crosby, you go Watt, and you go
Garrett,
Bosa,
yeah,
maybe, and then Parsons is not too far down the list than that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're Dallas and you're Jera, you just pay him. Like, cut to the chase, give him a deal. Maybe he wants to reset the market. I don't know. You've done it before. Like, you gave CeeDee Lamb a boatload, and you gave Dak a contract that still hasn't been topped.
But also, guess what you cost yourself by waiting this long? It's what the Niners did last year with Ayuk, honestly.
Yep, fair.
TJ Watt signed his deal for how much was it? 42 per year? AAV? I have it here written down. 41 AAV for TJ Watt. Now the price for Micah Parsons probably begins at 42 AAV. If you didn't wait, you could have gotten Micah probably for 40 or 41. But the Steelers set the market for you. Now you have to not just match it, but probably beat it. It's not a case of, am I better than TJ Watt? It's just, I am currently the best pass rusher that is up for a contract extension, so I'm going to get the new biggest deal of all time.
It's the way it works. And for the Niners and Brock Purdy, it didn't go quite that way because Brock wasn't insistent on it. And I think both sides looked at Brock Purdy and realized that no matter what we give you, it's going to be such a massive life-changing raise that, you know, if Brock is not dead set on being the top guy in the market, and he wasn't, and the team is dead set on giving him a contract that is going to be market fair, you settle on 53 average annual. And I think both sides, if you're Brock Purdy, even if you have a little bit of ego about where you are on the list, you go check your direct deposit every couple weeks and you feel okay,
yeah, you'll
right?
You'll be fine.
You're going to pull through.
Whatever that signing bonus was, you're fine on that alone. There's no doubt. Hey, it is time to give away the pair of tickets to Saturday night's Giants-Mets game. The first 20,000 fans will get a Stephen Curry bobblehead, and we're giving away a pair of tickets courtesy of Panini right now. All you need to do is be the first person to the contest line at 415-523-4652. Again, that's 415-523-4652 with the answer to this following question. I didn't remember many of the details, but between 4:30 and 5, we talked about this 49er having a kid and leaving for Niners training camp.
Oh, that was awkward.
So you got to tell us which 49er we were talking about. Again, call 415-523-4652. Good luck, and remember that if you don't win right now, we're giving away one more pair of tickets tomorrow afternoon right here on Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you on 95.7 The Game. Yeah, let's hear that Jerry Jones one more time, because it really is just astonishing the way that he's talking about this. Here's Jerry Jones on Micah Parsons' contract negotiations, and he takes a subtle, not so subtle shot at both Parsons and his quarterback, Dak Prescott.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
There's something about the way Jerry Jones says all this that, like, he thinks it's the most astounding philosophical thing that's ever been said. Like, he's giving all of us this crazy knowledge. And it's just, no, Jerry, they're football players. They might get hurt. It's kind of what happens.
I'll tell you what, if I had my druthers, if a man doesn't play in a football game, the man doesn't get paid to play in that football game.
I guarantee you he thinks that.
That man got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. I don't know if y'all are following me, but what I did there was I led you up to it, and then I gave you the delivery. It was Dak Prescott. In case y'all didn't realize that, he missed 2/3 of the year. Dak Prescott, he still got paid, even though he didn't play. Weak.
That's a pretty good Jerry Jones.
Not bad. One more time through, and I'll probably even sharpen it.
There it is. Jerry Jones on Micah Parsons.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
A lot of things you think about when you're going to pay a player, when guaranteeing that money.
The best is when he says, talking about Micah, he says, just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year, and then pauses and said, seriously?
Right.
It's like, yeah, he missed 6 games, Jerry. We all know this.
Right.
You guys really sucked last year. Part of it was because Micah did not stay healthy. Yeah, it's what happens sometimes. Unfortunate, but it happened. Seriously.
And he said, seriously. Like, yeah, Jerry, we are Cowboys fans, and we watch the games, and when we're watching the defense and you don't have that absolute freak of an athlete wrecking the game, we notice, Jerry. Seriously. We notice. I mean, good Lord.
So the Niners might have went 6-11, Dibs, and maybe you're a little worried about the talent on the roster this year. And you're upset that they didn't win a Super Bowl the multiple times they've been to the Super Bowl lately. And I hear you. I'm right there with you. Giants, Warriors, they delivered me championships. The Niners haven't. We can always say, Dibs, at least we're not the Cowboys. Because the Cowboys have it 10 times worse than the Niners do.
Yeah, they do. And it's because of the dysfunctionality of ownership. And that's where I give Jed York and the other ownership a lot of credit for mainly what Jed has done, going from the Jim Harbaugh, Trent Baalke era, where famously or infamously, he tried to go into a meeting and Jim Harbaugh basically said, this is for men only, and shuttled him to the door. And Jed York, I think, was a little bit too open with the media, and there were leaks in the building, and the ownership, I don't think, was as buttoned up as it is now. And you bring in Kyle Shanahan, who says, John Lynch is my guy. You bring in John Lynch, and Jed York has taken a couple of giant steps back, not only out of the media spotlight, but feels like out of being involved with the football part of it. And you talk about Dallas and Jerry Jones. He's not only meddling as an owner, but he's got his kid in there, and he's making the calls and calling the shots, and you know, he's not a football guy, and that's why your organization is a mess.
Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't really expect, and by the way, real quick, shout out to Mark in San Ramon for winning our contest. Congrats, Mark. You're headed to Giants Mets on Saturday night, and get there early and you can get a Steph Curry bobblehead. The answer to our question was McCaffrey. McCaffrey is the Niner who recently had a kid and is on his way to training camp today. He'll report tomorrow, but congrats again to Mark and San Ramon. I didn't really expect this to become our Cowboys hate segment, Dibs, but just while we're in this space, I was looking up playoff odds for everybody in the NFL, and I was surprised how low the Cowboys are, how long their odds are to make the playoffs. And there are only one, two, three, four teams in the NFC that have worse odds to make the playoffs than the Cowboys. The Cowboys have the fifth worst odds to make the playoffs in the NFC. Do you think you can name the other ones?
That have worse odds
than the Cowboys in the NFC to make the playoffs?
I'd have to go with the Saints would be one.
They had the worst odds in the entire league with the Browns at +820.
Okay.
To make the playoffs.
The New York Giants would be worse.
Yes, third worst odds, +790.
The Carolina Panthers have worse odds.
Carolina Panthers are there. They're +225. You're going in order. You're just missing the one that's right behind the Cowboys.
Yeah, and this is a little bit difficult because it's no one in the East. It's no one in the North. Could be somebody else in the South. I don't think so. I'm going to go with Arizona in the West.
It is not Arizona. Arizona's all the way up at +122. The Cowboys are +190. The other team in the NFC with worse playoff odds than the Cowboys.
The Bears. Yeah.
I would not have gotten that. I'm a believer in the Bears this year. They're +194. The Cowboys +190.
I was torn between the Bears and the Cardinals because, like, Tampa would have better odds.
Yep.
And, you know, in the East, the Commanders and Eagles definitely would have better odds.
Yep.
The Seahawks and Rams and Niners would have better odds.
Way better.
Yeah, you start to think about who else would be in there. The Packers, Lions, and Vikings would have better odds.
Yep.
And so that boils it down to just one of those two, and I guess wrong. Luckily, you're not in there because I would have gotten a hearty buzzer.
Yeah. I mean, you should have gotten, like, all the dings. I mean, you did a great job
leading
up to it.
Lucas knows where one button is, and that's the whoop. He has the nope and the yep, but it's great. It's nice to have you in here.
Sometimes he uses those because he doesn't know where the buzzer and the ding is.
Nope. Yeah.
You don't have to peel back the curtain that far.
Well, I'm peeling it back to where it's nice to have Grandy in here because the harshness of the buzzer, and it's an insta buzzer too. before. Yeah, you're kind of catching up.
There you go.
You're getting too comfortable back there. By the time I said the cart, nah, I couldn't even gotten the Denoles out. It would have been, yeah, I think it's the cart. Nah. Look at you, Lucas. You get the bit.
You're figuring it out. Maybe you could just stay in there, huh? Yeah. But yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised at how far down the list the Cowboys are. I mean, it makes sense because you laid out like every team in the NFC, and you're like, all right, yeah, they're better than the Cowboys. Yeah, they're better than the Cowboys. Yeah, they're better than, like, it makes sense. But off the top of my head, I don't know. You think Cowboys, you think, well, they'll probably be in the race, but they are looking at an uphill battle. There's no doubt.
So. And yeah, their win total is probably, I would guess, 8.5 going into this year.
Get it for you.
Yeah, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but if they're that far down in the playoff odds, then
7.5.
7.5 even. Whoa.
The under is the favorite, or the over is the favorite, -125.
At 7.5. Yeah. That makes sense. So, you know, the odds would tell you that they're going to go 8-9, which, you know, there you go.
Not a
Cowboys.
Playoff team.
No, not a playoff team.
Yeah, so.
You mentioned the Niners and the Super Bowl, and the Cowboys haven't won it in even longer, but...
Haven't been.
Right.
Been way longer.
And I was just thinking about this because you were born in 96,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So
May of 96.
Okay, so you were about a year and 3 months away from being alive for the Super Bowl,
yeah.
And I just punched it up. It's been 11,131 days since the Niners won the Super Bowl. So you're coming up on being 11,000 days old pretty soon here.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to... Thank you. I did the math. I just want to see how many days... It was January 29th, 1995.
But only like 500 days from the Niners last being in the Super Bowl.
Right, which is good, but you mentioned it before, like the heartbreak, and you've seen your Giants do it thrice. You've seen your Warriors do it four times, and the Niners have been to three Super Bowls in your lifetime.
Lost all of them.
Right, and they lost all of them in unique fashions. The one in New Orleans, where you had the power outage, the Beyonce outage, and then furious rally, only to fall short with the fade route to Crabtree, and then the two to Kansas City of more recent vintage.
Meanwhile, the Dallas Cowboys, Dibs, haven't been to the Super Bowl since January 28th, 1996. It's been almost 11,000 days since they've even appeared in the Super Bowl. Not won a Super Bowl, but appeared in the Super Bowl.
Oh, so the very next year,
yes.
In 96, they went and...
They won, but they haven't been back to the Super Bowl, win or loss, since.
Yeah, and the Niners have been to three and haven't won them, but...
What's better, to have loved and lost or not loved at all?
Look
I don't
at you.
Know,
I think it's better to have loved and lost.
I think so, too.
And, you know, especially for you as a Niner fan, it's heartbreaking to know that, you know, they've had chances and they just haven't been able to get across the finish line, but at least you had three Super Bowl Sundays where you could be excited about your team being there.
And the Niners have the extra added trump card in... recently, we've beat the Cowboys in the playoffs two times, including 2 years ago here at Levi's, and then the last year of the Jimmy Garoppolo era, although I guess not quite because he came back and played partial of a year, but the year that they went to the NFC Championship game against the Rams, they beat the Cowboys earlier in that playoff run.
Yeah, which is nice, yeah. Do you remember
the
2013 Super Bowl? A 17-year-old Mark Grandy?
Oh, of course.
16-year-old Grandy coming up on being 17?
It ruined me.
The Harbaugh Bowl.
It wrecked me.
What happened? Where were you?
I was at home watching with my parents. I remember once the game ended just lying on the living room floor face down for like 2 hours. Because I was just so emotionally distraught.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just destroyed.
Just destroyed.
We actually were there for the week leading up to it, Radio Row. Mm. Our program director at the time sent the whole station. And it was pretty fun. The whole station went, and I was doing the morning then with the Rise guys, mm. Whitey and Kreidler, and Rick Bucher. God love him. He was doing afternoons. I think that was Bucher and Towney at the time.
Wow.
And we go out to dinner, whole station, producers and hosts, and the bill comes, Rick Bucher. I got that, boys.
Wow.
It's about 15 hundo. I never saw the bill. My only regret was knowing that he picked it up, I would have gone heavier on the alcohol and the appetizers. I thought we were all going to pass the hat, so yeah. I was going a little bit easy. But Rick Bucher, points for Bucher, picking up the tab right there in New Orleans.
But next time, Rick, give us the...
little heads up,
yeah,
right?
So we could take advantage.
No deep pockets Bucher was going like that, but it's one of the fun memories.
I would have, you know, had like five more drinks if I knew that was coming.
Absolutely. Appetizer and dessert.
Just because we're on this like a prediction standpoint, Niners win total this year, Dibs. It is set at 10.5. It's always dangerous when you bet on the teams that you root for, and this is where I always have to check myself. It feels like 11 wins is in the cards for me this year. I think I'd take the over if I was forced over under 10.5 wins for the Niners.
Absolutely. I mean, 10.5 is a little bit of a tough number because you need 11-6, obviously. I'm Captain Obvious over here. So if you look at it, one bad injury can really derail it. If it's a quarterback, fine. I mean, all bets are off. Yeah. But you're looking at this schedule and you're trying to find more than 6 losses.
Yeah, find 7 losses. I dare you.
Right. And that's where I look at the schedule, not only the opponents, but the stack, how they lay out. And I can find a few. Like, you're probably not going to go 6-0 in the division. It's a pretty good division. And you have the Rams on a Thursday night early on the road, short week, that's a tough spot.
Week 1 in Seattle won't be easy either.
Right. And so you look at those two, and beyond that, I don't see a lot of ferocious opponents in really difficult spots. So if you pressed me to find 7 losses, I could come up with 7 maybes, but I also like the over on that.
If the team is just generally healthy, like we talked about last week, Dibs, there's going to be injuries. But like if any of your key guys don't miss just the, you know, you add in like maybe they miss 2 games and that's it, 10 wins or less would feel like a disappointment. If you're relatively healthy, 10 wins doesn't feel good enough to me. Not necessarily to make the playoffs. 10 wins and you're in the playoffs. But 10 wins and you're mostly healthy with this roster, so that feels like you came up short.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at where it's going to be difficult, and if you go 3-3 in the division, which I think is plausible, the division is good and competitive, so 3-3 in the division, you've got 11 more games. Can you win 8 of those? 8 of the other 11? When you take on the likes of Jacksonville and Carolina, Cleveland, and the Colts and the Bears.
Like
Should be able to.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the point spreads, the futures lines, I think they're favored in 15 of the 17.
Mm.
I'll bring that up on the other side and we'll see exactly which games. I think there's 2 where they are currently underdog and only by a point.
Is that probably Rams?
Yeah.
Would be my guess.
And I think the other one might be the Browns, which is...
The Browns?
I might be wrong, and it's at that's the last game before they have their bye.
Mm.
It might be Tampa, because they do have Tampa
that would make sense.
On the road, although they're coming off a baby bye because they play the Thursday, and then they go at Tampa. I'll find that for you on the other side.
All right, time for a break. We're sponsored by Cache Creek Casino Resort. Dibs and Grandy with you. We'll wrap things up when we come back right after this on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard, it's Dibs and Grandy with you today and for the rest of the week. Willard will be back on Monday. Do you think by the time Willard comes back, we have resolutions to Kuminga and or Juwan?
Or it'll be Juwan, not Kuminga.
Not Kuminga.
I don't know. Every time I seem to put some sort of a deadline out there, like, well, you know, summer league, once summer league's over, teams want to be done with all this ass. They want to be able to go into their off season, and here we are, and they're still dealing with this ass. And you by ass, I mean stuff.
I have to go and find this again. Let me make sure I'm crediting the right person. I saw a report today that, you know how it's been generally understood that the Warriors, whenever the Kuminga business gets sorted out, the Warriors are going to quickly sign Horford and Melton.
Yeah.
The first additional report I heard on top of that was from Anthony Irwin, who covers the Lakers. and is pretty plugged in down there in L.A. And he was quote tweeting a post of essentially like the best remaining free agents out there. And he's obviously looking at this with an eye on what the Lakers should be doing. But he wrote, based on some of the stuff I've heard, Horford, Melton, and even GP2 are considered likely for Golden State. So maybe you can add GP2 to the list, Dibs.
If he comes in on a veteran minimum.
Yes, that's what it would have to be.
Yeah, but. And I don't know all of the contract details as to, you know, what a Kuminga contract would do, how that would spur them into either the taxpayer mid-level or the non-taxpayer mid-level. I don't know what number that would be that would allow them to still spend the $14 million that would be available, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I do know they have GP2's bird rights, so that allows them a little bit of flexibility to go over the cap with that contract. But I'm surprised that GP2 hasn't been able to get any action elsewhere to where, like Kevon Looney, $8 million a year, boom, I'll take it, done, signed. He moves on, and we haven't had that sort of thing happened to GP2 yet.
Well, the reality could potentially be that he has, but he's just turned him down because he wants to be back with the Warriors. I mean, he had like his only success as a pro has been here, basically. Maybe he's willing to just take the minimum and ride out the last few years of his career here. Who knows? But interesting. I thought I'd point that out. But we were just talking about Niners win total, Dibs, and I know you did the real quick dive. Not necessarily a deep dive, but the Niners are favored in all but two games this coming year. Is that right?
Yep, back-to-back games. The Thursday, as I mentioned, at L.A., and then the subsequent game on the road at Tampa Bay.
Okay.
Both of those on the futures lines, they're 1.5 underdogs. And those numbers and those lines obviously will change as teams play, and they either perform or don't perform. And so you get into the actual game week, and those lines probably won't stand pat, but interesting to note because last year they were favored in all 17 and they went 6-11. So it just does not necessarily indicate how you're going to do based on what the odds makers are thinking.
But it was pretty similar 2 years ago, right? When the Niners went all the way to the Super Bowl and they were favored in almost every single game that year too, weren't they?
Yep. I think, again, these are the futures lines. And so last year, when you got into the actual game week, I don't think that they were favored
late
in every
year.
Game.
No.
Certainly when they went to Green Bay and Buffalo in those back to back weeks.
Versus Detroit, not favored at the end of the year in that one.
Right. I think Green Bay and Buffalo in those games back to back, they were underdog in both of those.
Yeah, and they got outscored 73-20 combined in those two games.
My goodness, yep. And that's it was just all bad all year, but
it was Brandon Allen starting in Green Bay, if you remember.
That's right. And that was just kind of a woeful year, a lost year. And one of the deep dives I did recently is just looking at the Shanahan teams over the last couple of years. Where are they at halftime? And in 2023, I was looking at this, did they trail in the second half in 2023? And I have a list here. Against Pittsburgh, they never trailed. They won. Against the Rams, they were down late second, but they didn't trail in the second half. They won. Never trailed against the Giants. Never trailed against Arizona. Never trailed against Dallas.
Yep. That was the gigantic win on Sunday night. I remember that one.
They were down 13-10 at Cleveland in the late third. Moody, that was the Moody game, missed a couple of kicks, and they lost to Cleveland. They were down most of the way at Minnesota. That was the zero blitz game. I'm sort of built for this. And they lost that game. They were down to Cincy at halftime and in the fourth quarter. They lost that game.
Yeah.
So what I discovered is in 2013, they trailed at the half three times.
2023.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that what I thought? That's what I said.
2013.
My bad.
You're good.
They trailed at the half three times that year, and they were 0-3 in those games. They led at the half 13 times. They were 11-2. So I was just looking at the Shanahan model of victory. It's get the lead at halftime, run the ball, and snuff teams out. Last year, they led at halftime in 9 games, and they were 5-4. So last year was kind of the outlier of Shanahan had some leads, and they just couldn't hold them.
They had so many just absolutely stupid mistakes down the stretch of so many games that cost them. Obviously, the big part of being able to hold leads, and maybe also gaining those leads in the first place. But once you have them, the way that you keep them is by running the ball effectively and killing clock and long drives and turning those long drives into points and extending your lead. And so much of that, obviously, is going to be based on Christian McCaffrey. I think one of the biggest questions or maybe challenges that I see for Shanahan this year, Dibs, and I could extend it also to McCaffrey himself, it is just find a way to give Christian McCaffrey the best chance possible to stay healthy for the majority of the season. He misses a game or two, that's fine, but we can't have him miss like five games. The Niners can't do that. So it's going to be on Shanahan to, one, mix and match with the guys in the backfield, like see some Garendo, maybe you see some Jordan James. It's obviously going to be McCaffrey-centric, but when McCaffrey's on the field, don't just give it to him 100% of the time, and make sure you mix in others, because if McCaffrey is healthy going into the postseason and relatively fresh as you could possibly be after playing 17 games, you're going to have a pretty good shot no matter what seeds you are. The way that they use McCaffrey is going to be paramount for me this season, because I don't want to see too many like 25 carry games for McCaffrey at all.
You hope not, but if you're in a spot in the fourth quarter and you need to preserve the lead, it's a one-score game, it's going to be McCaffrey, and that's going to be something that we all are going to talk about and we all have to deal with.
What about Garendo, Dibs?
Yeah, what about Garendo?
Give him the ball.
Sure. And so you're up 24-21 with 6 minutes to go, and you need to go on a classic 11-play 48-yard drive to soak up 5 minutes and kick a field goal to go up by six with, you know, a minute to go or 41 seconds to go. You don't want to have that unravel by giving the ball to a less experienced running back and have him cough it up or go the wrong way. Or
just like McCaffrey did in the Super Bowl, huh?
But it happens, and he fumbled, and that was a huge play in that game. But you're going to ride or die with your dude, and I'm looking just at 2023. He led the league in touches with 339. He led the league in rushing yards, and he led the league in scrimmage yards, 2023. He led the league in rushing and receiving touchdowns with 21.
God, he was so good.
And you went to the Super Bowl. And he was, what, fourth in the MVP? And Purdy was fifth, or vice versa?
I think he might have been third, McCaffrey.
Okay, they both were top five.
Regardless, they were up
there. I forget, but the carries that year, McCaffrey had 272, Debo 37, Elijah Mitchell 75, Jordan Mason 40. And then you've got Juszczyk with 5. Ray McLeod had 3. George Kittle had a carry.
There you go, George.
Which I had forgotten. But McCaffrey had, not counting the quarterbacks, about 65% of the carries. And he played in 16 games. So get ready for that again.
Obviously, 2023 was amazing. And it's worth it if you win a Super Bowl. But I blame what happened last year on how they used him in 2023. And it's why if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm worried about Saquon Barkley this year, because he did the exact same thing that McCaffrey did 2 years ago. He did it this past year. If you have your fantasy drafts coming up, I know a lot of people are going to pick Saquon number one overall. I wouldn't. I could be wrong, but we'll see how it all plays out. But McCaffrey's health, I mean, that's going to determine so much.
Saquon last year, 345 carries. Not touches. We're talking about carries.
Talking about practice.
And I wonder how many catches he had, because I don't recall.
Not as many as McCaffrey, but some for sure.
Yeah, he ended up with 352 touches. So, I'm sorry, that was the previous year. 378 touches, so he had 33 catches.
Yeah, couple of the game.
Led the league in touches, led the league in yards rushing, and scrimmage yard. Sound familiar?
He's also on the cover of Madden. And if you believe in the Madden curse, just like McCaffrey was last year, maybe you stay away from Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I mean, if we ever have a fantasy draft scheduled, maybe I can either draft him or stay away from him.
We'll figure that out later this week. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It's Best of the Game, an hour of our best content from the day, hosted by Lucas Alexander. And coming up next, you're not going to want to miss the conversation that the two Joes in the morning had with Hall of Famer John Schmoltz. Great conversation. That's what's coming up next. Dibs, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
All right. For Dibs, for Lucas, for Ken, I'm Mark Randy. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk tomorrow on 95.7 The Game.